At the federal level, President Joe Biden has set a goal of putting aside 30% of America's land and water for preservation by 2030. Here in the Empire State, policymakers are looking to codify a similar goal with legislation that recently made its way through the Capitol and just needs to be signed by Governor Kathy Hochul. To discuss the issue, we're joined by its assembly sponsor, Pat Fahey, an Albany County Democrat. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
So what does it actually mean to preserve land as, I guess, defined by this legislation?
Well, in this case, it is a goal. It is not a mandate. Just as we've set some very ambitious goals on the environment and on climate action, we thought that this fell right into place because the UN issued a report just over 2 years ago, the UN Convention on Biological Diversity, and they really said we need a worldwide target of conserving more than 30% of the planet, of the land on the planet, land and water, by 2030. When we saw that, we knew that in the U.S., there are certain states that can easily meet that, right, with especially some Western states. But we knew it was a good goal, and it paired well with our climate action goals. So we introduced it not quite about a year and a half ago, and we think, while we're not that far off from it right now, we do think that this will help bolster our resiliency efforts, which are, and as well as farmland preservation and water quality and more. So we do think it makes a difference, and while it is still a goal, we do believe the governor and the state are very supportive and recognize that in the long run, this will help everyone.
But what does it mean to actually preserve land as you're envisioning it here? Does it simply mean we aren't using it for anything? Are certain uses allowed? What do you envision?
Absolutely, certain uses are allowed. So, for instance, with farmland, as long as that farmland is preserved and that we're not fueling sprawl and overdeveloping valuable farmland, that would certainly qualify. It's the same with water. While we are preserving that water, it doesn't mean recreational activities wouldn't still be allowed. But it does help by preserving land and water and making sure that we are prioritizing those needs. It helps our sustainability. It helps with reducing the risk from flooding. And as you know, the former governor had issued a report, I think a year and a half ago, about how in his first 10 years in office, we had already spent $50 billion as a state. I mean, just extraordinary numbers on weather-related disasters. So we know that this will also help with preventing future disasters because it helps the whole climate resiliency effort in reducing risk.
And how heavy a lift would it be to get to 30% by 2030? Are we anywhere close to that?
We think it's achievable. And when we had reached out to the state on this, to DEC and others, they really believe it is achievable. As you know, as part of the Environmental Protection Fund, EPF, which we've just increased again in the state budget, every year there was funding put aside for state land acquisition, which we've done multiple times, for instance, up in the Adirondacks, as well as out on Long Island. Right now, rough estimates put us at about 19% of land that is conserved and is, 19% of that 30% that we need to meet. But we think that this one is achievable. And we've gotten some very good feedback on why it makes effort, why it makes sense, and why, this will help to promote more conservation easements to some of this is smart growth, right? And doing things more wisely because it, again, it is that resiliency effort, which will help prevent flooding as well. So it's not just a feel good measure. It really is protecting and reducing our risk on extreme weather patterns as well. And then there's the whole outdoor access. There's the preservation of food security. There's other pieces that tie into this, and places like the Adirondacks, like our parks, whether local or state parks, those are good for tourism as well. So it's not just, there's nothing just feel good about this. This helps our, this has many, many economic benefits too, whether it's tourism and travel or preserving our food sources.
And how do you envision the state identifying what land it's going to put aside?
The state, there's so many groups on this. The Nature Conservancy is one that comes to mind that has been intimately involved in this for some time. And as you know, there's the Open Space Institute. There's national groups that have been involved in this that are really trying to make sure that we meet these goals. And but at the same time, even small towns. I worked with Bethlehem when I first started to represent them, now almost 10 years ago, for conservation easements. It helped them with some smart growth efforts. So that where they had a small farmer, where there wasn't a succession plan, or where there was pressure on development, it allowed them to make a conservation easement on their farmland, keep it off the tax rolls for as long as 99 years. And even those types of things count. And yet it doesn't mean it's going to be cut up into half acre lots of a new development, which only add to many of the costs in the town, whether it's school or roads, bridges and sewers. So so it allows it gives some pressure in towns where there is a high development pressure, gives them time to plan. So we DEC and others, nonprofits that I just mentioned, really have done a lot of work in this area, and we think that, again, that it's achievable.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about legislation that would set a goal of preserving 30% of state land and water by 2030, and our guest is Assemblymember Patricia Fahey, who sponsors the legislation that sets this goal. And you've stressed, and I just mentioned it, that this is a goal. How does that make it different than the climate change goals that are in the Climate Leadership Protection and Community Act, the sweeping climate change legislation passed in 2019, which sets goals for reducing our greenhouse gas emissions in the near future and with the final goal in 2050? Is there any difference between the goals in that in terms of how they're being enforced versus, say, this quote-unquote goal?
No, we see this actually as a complement to helping us achieve those ambitious climate goals adopted in 2019 that you just mentioned. So we see this as a complement, because in the U.S., and I don't have a state figure, but in the U.S. there are estimates that 1 million acres are lost to development every year. 1 million. So, and it's put an estimated 1 million species also at risk of extinction due to human-driven climate change or human-driven climate actions, adverse actions. So we do think it's a complement that will help us achieve those goals, because this helps so much with conservation efforts. Again, the climate resiliency and protection from extreme weather that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. But it's also that economic sustainability in preserving some of our food, land for producing our food. And so there's many, if not most, of the same groups that really help push and back the climate goals from 2019. It also backed this bill as well. So it's we don't see one in competition with the other. We see one as helping the first one to achieve its goals, to achieve the goals.
Well, if we are codifying this goal then, and we are putting it on the same sort of pedestal as the 2019 climate change law, is it possible that future state policies or even local municipal decisions could face legal challenges in the future under the idea that they might be undermining the state's ability to hit this law? Could someone say, we can't develop this property, or the state can't sell certain property because we have a law on the books that says we need to have 30% of our land and water set aside by 2030, and this sort of policy would undermine the state law? Is that something you're concerned about at all?
That had come up. And again, because there are goals, there's no ability to do an eminent domain here or a land grab or any type of land taking, if you will.
Right, but I'm saying it's almost the reverse, though. Are you worried that development is going to be challenged because it would, say, run contrary to these goals?
It would have to be. In most cases, it would have to be a massive, massive development for somebody to say that will keep us from reaching the goal. So these questions did come up, and we hope that it is something taken into consideration in most towns. But again, the way to do that is through conservation easements, which are all voluntary. As I mentioned, often where it's a farmer, where there's an aging farmer who is in the midst of a town like a Bethlehem or Guilderland in our area, where there are development pressures. At the same time, there are those who want to practice smart growth efforts. So what they do is work out relieving them from property tax burdens and make sure that either that land is kept open or time is bought in order to provide some smart growth effort, so such that it's not working against these goals. So I think there is a way to do this without doing eminent domain, without doing any type of land grab, if you will.
Right.
And at the same time, we have some really positive efforts, long-established efforts, like the Nature Conservancy, like the Open Space Institute. We even had support on this from the Empire State Forest Products Association. In fact, I think that really helped me get bipartisan support on this bill, because they recognize that the less we develop, we have sustainable trees that we can cut off of these properties and fuel what is a renewable energy source, and that's our trees. So we can keep growing trees, and we know that helps with our carbon issues as well. So we saw this as a win-win, but no land grab intended here.
Well, finally, are you concerned at all about the possibility, and maybe this isn't a realistic one, that the areas where we're going to have future land and water preservation are going to be solely in areas where there is essentially cheap land that might be up for sale, and that land that is in high demand for future development but might also be prime candidates for preservation is not going to be developed? Are you worried about any sort of geographic distinctions like that?
That's a very fair question, and certainly we are seeing the reverse of that right now, right? Mm-hmm. We're seeing land being grabbed in highly developed areas or expanding areas, right? We have one of the few growth areas in the capital region. One of the few growth areas in upstate New York is in the capital region. And we see what I would define as sprawl in some of our areas, including in the area surrounding the outskirts of Saratoga. We need smart growth there because it also puts so much pressure on, not just on schools, fire and sewer and water, it's roads and the upkeep of those roads. So yes, this will help, and we need to make sure that it's not just high value areas that, as you mentioned, it's also areas with low wealth, because we want to make sure that they're tourism and that small businesses can still continue to thrive there. So, ideally, we have asked that this include a state, we already have a state land acquisition plan, but this goal must be done in conjunction with that plan so that there isn't an unfairness component that you alluded to.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember Patricia Fahey. She's an Albany County Democrat. Pat, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.